Well, where to begin tonight?
It's been already an interesting evening for me. Appreciate everyone that's out here being here tonight. This lesson is not intended for anybody to step on their toes in the sense that, that I have somebody in mind as I'm presenting this lesson that's here tonight. But it's more of an instruction for teaching, for a warning maybe, or someone that we need to watch out for, perhaps. You know, when we are baptized, we are changed. We have a new birth. Or we should. We should have a new birth. The lesson that I'll be presenting tonight was actually something that I have experienced, I guess, but the material that sort of prompted me to do this tonight was actually a letter that I saw in a something that Larry Rouse had put out that actually referenced Edward Bagwell Jr., that referenced something that went to Gardner Hall. And I guess it could have kept going back. And if it's true, then actually it's going to go back to the apostles and, of course, to God. So, you know, as we come up with lessons, we really are not coming up with anything new if it's based on truth. I want us to turn our attention, if you will, to 3 John. And in 3 John, I'm going to read for you. It says there, "The elder to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy to have some brothers come and tell about your faithfulness to the truth and how you continue to walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear my children are walking in the truth. Dear friend, you are faithful in what you are doing for the brothers, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will have nothing to do with us. So if I come, I will call attention to what he is doing, gossiping maliciously about us. Not satisfied with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. Dear friends, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. Demetrius is well spoken of everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. I have much to write you, but I do not want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we'll talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings. Greet your friends there by name." There are 3 men mentioned by name in this letter. 2 are recommended. 1 is not. 2 are a blessing. 1 is not. 2 have a spirit of service. 1 does not. 2 are humble. 1 not. 2 appears to love God before even maybe their life itself. 1 does not. 1 wants to be preeminent. 1 wants to be number 1. 1 is centered upon himself, selfishness. And then that's so much to do with sin. Even the very word sin, in the heart of it, is the word I, or is the letter I, right there in the middle of it. And so much sin has to do with what I want, what I feel is the best thing. We take God and put his authority secondary. There's much I could say about the sins of Diotrephes here, and even in the short writing. We see the good things of Gaius and even Demetrius. Even though it's just a very little bit written about these men here, we see the good things. And we also see sins, plural, of Diotrephes here. But how can this happen? How can a doctrine of these happen? Surely, you know, when he was baptized, as we read this morning, there wasn't, as he rose up out of the water, this preeminence. Do we know who baptized Dr. Spies? We don't. Do we know when and where he baptized? We don't. Do we know the reaction of those that were present as when we have someone baptized? Is our reaction so much joy? We don't. We only know that he must have been baptized by someone somewhere because he was a member of the church. And we also know that whatever church he was joined to received a first-class troublemaker. What a pitiful thing that we can say about a member of the church in saying that they are a troublemaker rather than an asset to their congregation. Earlier in my life, I really didn't know a whole lot about congregational problems. So I think I missed maybe half of what this scripture, if not more, teaches us relating to diocese. In the years since, I've come to see how churches' effectiveness can be destroyed because they have allowed themselves to be dominated by a modern diocese. Let's remember what John here said about him. He said, "I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to the minds his deeds which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church." How could a church become victim of such a bully? How does a church allow a dictator to gain that much power to lord over the congregation? I think I have a better insight now than I did probably a decade ago. Among those who become church bullies could be an elder. He could be a preacher. Could be any member. And in each one of those cases, they all have the same common denominator. They love preeminence. Love being number one. And they will do almost anything to gain that. They have this self-evaluated superiority of their judgment, and that must be what reigns over anything else, no matter what. No matter how much it may hurt anybody else there, or how much confusion it causes in the church, that must reign, for that gives him control. You know, if one like Diotrephes, think about it, he rose to that position, you think, well, that was a long time ago. That was 2,000 years ago. You know, that kind of stuff is not happening anymore. Diotrephes rose to that kind of control with that congregation when the apostles were walking the earth. Here's John. John is actually writing a letter here. So how much more likely is it to happen in our lifetime than it was then? Sometimes this happens with good brethren being almost powerless to prevent it. However, brethren, we can identify that. And the earlier it can be identified, the much better it will be, minimizing any damage that could be done. So again, the question, how can a man like Diotrephes happen? Well, our society is overrunning with problem. We've got women saying they're men, and men saying they're women. We've got you know, women preaching in churches, it's just a matter of I know better. And it's what I want. It's not what God has said. It's what I want. Again, sin. Not God's authority. But, you know, I think we have to understand that men like this, or women, if it may be the case, they can't do it alone. He needs, she needs the support of, or the acquiescence, perhaps, of other members of the church. You know, as a starter, he can generally count upon a good member who is going to remain passive regardless of what happens. They will not actively support the wrong, but they're not going to actively oppose it either. And that's a big, big problem that we need to make sure. I don't think we have that. I don't think that we have that here. But some people do. He may not gain their active support, but neither will he get their active resistance either. Like a schoolyard bully, there'll be others that may gravitate toward him. May be proud of their own little problems that they may have run into with somebody of their congregation. He'll gain the support of some that are disgruntled. For whatever reason, they'll be joining in hands. That's where this little power nucleus begins, perhaps. And then he'll start to expand that out to the rest of the congregation. And I think we see Diotrephes using some of these principles. These people are usually very skillful at people skills in some way. We see things on TV sometimes that we can't understand how somebody would have yield the power that they would have at these cults and things. Well, a man can, even within a congregation, will take people who perhaps have a need for maybe feeling belonged. You know, you have that a lot. But they usually have a charming personality. That's another thing. They'll have something that they'll try to charm you with. Like the young man is out to win the heart of a young maiden. He'll zealously circulate among unsuspecting members and court them with smooth words and a flattering speech. You know, we're told about that elsewhere in the Scriptures, too. In Romans chapter 16, beginning in verse 17, there it says, I urge you, brothers and sisters, to watch out for those who cause divisions and put obstacles in your way that are contrary to the teaching you have learned. Keep away from them. For such people are not serving our Lord Jesus, but their own appetites. And it tells us, by smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the minds of naive people. They'll be even doing things that we want to do. They'll be inviting you over, and they'll be giving you things, perhaps even. They tell us in Galatians chapter 4, it says, they zealously court you, but for no good. Yes, they want to exclude you if they may be zealous for them. And right prior to that, in verse 16, I have therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth. Here, you know, the apostles probably had it rougher than we did because they were actually out there having to tell these people, this is the truth. In contrast to the courting that they were confronting with somebody like Diotrephes. But like I said, these people are usually pretty good students. They don't have to be well educated in the ways of the education of this world, but they are educated perhaps in the ways of men, in human nature. They know how to manipulate people. to know their yearnings and their anxieties, our desires for attention, acceptance, and approval, as I mentioned earlier. The one that I had first-hand experience with, and I believe you practiced it on his family. It matters not whether he can deliver what he promises, but just as long as those people think he can deliver it. Of those like that today, we can observe this courting and this charming attitude. It's like they're dangling a carrot in one hand, and in the other hand, they have the stick. Because those they can't charm and court, they're going to clobber with the stick. So they'll seldom gain complete control with their charm and smooth, flattering words. They now must take additional action, intimidation. You see that in Diotrephes. So, having failed to charm the brethren into subjection, all of them, he now rips off his sweet mask and is ready to play hardball. In 3 John there, it says that he used malicious words or malicious or mischievous words against those who stood in his way to get complete control. You know, sometimes we have to say some hard things to our brethren. We are commanded to rebuke one another in certain circumstances. But we also are given how that is to be done. We have the scriptures that tell us how that is to be done. You know, some brethren will be harmless as doves and as wise as serpents and can see right through these smooth words and this flattering speech. They're not fooled for a minute, but Diotrephes, through words and constantly beating them down, will play upon them. Perhaps they have fears. They may not have these aspirations as the other ones that he has already gained control over, but he plays upon their fears. So-and-so is going to leave the church. I'm going to leave the church. There's going to be a big split up. They will make their threats. See how many more brethren will cease to resist against them rather than subject themselves to this continual verbal abuse. If he doesn't get his way, he may then threaten the people personally. Or he may have his cohorts or clique threaten those that are resisting, not yielding to his judgment. So, intimidated by the threat, the brethren might yield rather than run the risk of what they fear might happen to the congregation. So now the Diotrephes has extended his power again, even more, another step further. Now maybe there's only a few that are not wooed by his sweet courting or intimidated by his malicious words that still stand in the way of complete control. As we see in 3 John, it's elimination time. It says there, and not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. You know, as long as he gets his way, he doesn't care how many brethren he eliminates. Either by driving them away or wrongfully putting them out of the church, his basic problem is his love for himself, his preeminence, and he's willing to resort to any measure to have it. So, you know, it's not so much a lesson about his sins, but I think the message I'm trying to get to is our awareness, our ready to stand. You might be someday in a congregation that you might be the only one that's willing to make a stand, but you need to stand and make it known. And I don't think there's one in our midst that's like Josh Speece, that's showing signs of being going to be preeminent over his brother. But, you know, we need to keep an eye out. Because, like I said earlier, the earlier that you see this, it's going to be a lot easier to stop it. Before he begins to form these factions around himself. In Titus 3, verse 10, it says, warn a divisive person once, and then warn him a second time. After that, had nothing to do with him. You know, if we don't stop it, he'll make havoc of the church. And he may, sadly, gain the upper hand before some of this might even be revealed to some people. We need to study diligently to be prepared for this. We need to, as we, the lesson this morning, we need to pray, particularly for wisdom, I think. As Hunter mentioned this morning, that's one of the things we should be praying for, is for wisdom. And courage, so that perhaps if we're in a congregation and where this kind of thing goes on, we'll be able to handle it in the correct way and not let the congregation be ruined by the occupants. As I said earlier, I hope we don't have anybody here tonight with the spirit of the occupants. But if you do, or if you had just put yourself before what God would have you to do, you have this moment right now to change, as we've had in our reading tonight. You can change. Now, you have been baptized, you can come up out of that water, cleanse a new person. Change. If you've done that, can go to God in prayer. We can help you do that. Change. So, the message tonight is if anybody needs to change, we're here to help you. So, if you will, please come forward as we stand and sing.